We'll hear in this interview Brenton from the Break the Chains Collective. Brenton is one of the organizers for their upcoming Break the Chains conference that will be taking place in Eugene, Oregon, between August 8th and August 10th to mark Prisoners' Justice Day and to discuss ongoing prisoner support and to encourage more people to partake in supporting prisoners and their causes. Brenton gives us a description of what issues the three-day Break the Chains conference will be addressing and what organizers hope to achieve from holding this conference. He also gives us a brief overview of some of the speakers and organizations that will be attending the conference.
Well, the Break the Chains Collective that is based in Eugene, Oregon, was selected by the Anarchist Black Cross Network last summer to hold a Anarchist Black Conference here in Eugene. And what we've decided to do is to open up the conference, and rather than focusing specifically on anarchist prison organizing, to focus more broadly on the prison industrial complex and the different movements that are fighting the prison industrial complex. And what we will be addressing at this conference are all the different forms of repression that are related to the prison industrial complex and what the prison industrial complex stands for and how we can come together to more effectively combat the prison industrial complex, since it is responsible for the suffering of so many different people from so many different backgrounds. Okay, so some of the people who will be speaking at this conference include Bo Brown, who is the founder of the Out of Control Lesbian Committee to Support Women Political Prisoners, and she is also a former political prisoner herself. She will be talking about the movement to support political prisoners in this country and talking about her own work with the Prison Activist Resource Center and the Eddie Hatcher Defense Committee. We have Ward Churchill, the American Indian Movement author and activist, who will be talking about the case of Leonard Peltier and the history of the COINTELPRO Act that was devised by the FBI and the authorities to crush political movements in this country. We have an individual named Splitting the Sky, who will be speaking about the Attica Rebellion and his involvement in fighting the repressive practices of the Canadian and U.S. governments. We have an individual named Ramzi Baroud, who will be speaking about Palestinian political prisoners. He is Palestinian himself, and his sister actually was murdered in Jenin, and so he has a lot of firsthand experience with repression in the occupied territories, and he'll be speaking about Palestinian political prisoners in the United States and in the occupied territories. We have representatives from different prisoner support movements throughout the country who will be participating in this conference, representatives from the Anarchist Black Cross Movement, the Anarchist Prisoners Legal Aid Network, the Jericho Movement, California Prison Focus, Freedom Archives, and other movements that are trying to grapple with a number of issues related to the prison industrial complex. We have individuals who are primarily involved in supporting women prisoners and prisoners and women prisoners who are doing time for retaliating against their abusive partners. We have representatives from groups who are involved in trying to stop the rampant prisoner-on-prisoner rape that goes on in facilities throughout this country. We have people speaking about the Attica Rebellion, veterans and survivors from the Attica Rebellion, talking about the relevance of the Attica Rebellion in North American revolt history and the relevance of that struggle and that rebellion to activists today. We have individuals talking about the specific cases of political prisoners like Eddie Hatcher and Leonard Peltier and Marilyn Buck and others. We have people talking about the struggles of the Irish political prisoners and how they have been able to win concessions in their country. So we really have representatives from a pretty broad spectrum of groups that are trying to fight repression, that are trying to support prisoners, and are trying to dismantle the prison industrial complex.
Brenton speaks on two West Coast political prisoners, as well as another prisoner who has been politically active since being incarcerated.
Well, one political prisoner on the West Coast who has gained a lot of attention recently because of the absurdity of his case is an individual by the name of Jeff Lewers, who also goes by the alias Free. He was arrested 3 summers ago for setting fire to 3 SUVs, 3 sports utility vehicles, at a car dealership to protest the destruction of the environment. And after after a year of trial and all kinds of demonization in the media and evidence tampering from the police and so forth, he was convicted of multiple arson charges stemming from this action of setting fire to SUVs, and he was sentenced to 22 years for setting fire to these three SUVs, despite the fact that the arson specialist in the fire department said that his action did not pose a threat to anyone because he explored the area before he decided to ignite this fire to make sure that no one was around, and also because of the nature of the fire, it did not pose a threat to anyone. Yet despite this, he was given a 22-plus year sentence, basically to send a message to the growing revolutionary movement on the West Coast that we're going to punish your people severely and we're going to try to spiritually devastate your movement so that your movement is not sustainable. Other prisoners include a Chicano anarchist by the name of Robert Thaxton, who was sentenced to over 7 years in prison for throwing a rock at a cop during an anti-globalization demonstration in Eugene, Oregon in June of 1999. He threw a rock at a cop during a scuffle in the streets, and even though the cop didn't sustain any injuries, he was sentenced to 7 years in prison and was basically scapegoated for the anti-globalization protest. And this cop, by the way, the cop that he threw this rock at, his name is Larry Blackwell, and he was actually fired from the LAPD and sent to Eugene after the LA riots. So he is a former LA cop, one of the LA's finest. And after a few months after Robert Thaxton was sentenced to 7 years for supposedly injuring him in this anti-globalization demonstration, Larry Blackwell was fired from the Eugene Police Department for drunk driving. So, in other words, this guy's a real scumbag, but unfortunately Robert Thaxton is going to do 7 years in prison for causing him a minor injury at this demonstration. There's an individual whose case I'm really concerned about, whose name is Tiwani Same, and he actually is doing time not for political action, but as an accomplice to an armed robbery. And basically what happened with him was he's a native guy, a Warm Springs Indian, and he grew up on the Warm Springs Reservation here in Oregon. And one of his few times that he left his reservation, you know, he was raised very traditionally, and one of the few times that he decided to leave the reservation and go to the city, he ended up getting drunk with some of his friends, and he was an accomplice to an armed robbery. He was in the car when some of his friends carried out an armed robbery, and he was sentenced to 9 years for this, even though he had no previous offenses, and even though he was raised traditionally, and, you know, and therefore he should probably be punished and held accountable traditionally. He was sentenced to 9 years merely for being an accomplice to this armed robbery, and even though it was a really, you know, a stupid thing to do, an armed robbery is always a stupid thing to do, unless you're, you know, expropriating funds to fund the political movement. He was given 9 years, and since he's been in prison, he has been involved in fighting for the rights of the native inmates whose culture is very disrespected in Oregon prisons. The racism against Indians is very severe, especially in Eastern Oregon. And since he's been in prison, he's witnessed, you know, native inmates be refused to participate in sweat, be refused to wear headbands, even though the other prisoners are allowed to wear beanies and caps and so forth. He's seen Indian prisoners framed. He's seen them have their belongings destroyed in front of them. He's seen the native prisoners have been intimidated in so many ways. So since he's been in prison, he's been doing a lot of organizing around native issues in prison, trying to get people to write to the prison authority, telling them to grant natives their religious rights as is due to them, you know, according to the Department of Corrections' own rules. And actually, he was involved in a rebellion a couple years ago with a couple other native inmates and a couple anarchist inmates, where they destroyed the closed supervision unit at the Two Rivers Correctional Institute in Eastern Oregon. And this was in protest of the abuse of native prisoners and the cutting of the educational programs. And since they took part in this rebellion, most of the concessions they were demanding when they took part in this rebellion have been granted to them. So they have been successful on some levels, but they have been met with severe repression because of the actions they've taken, both the confrontational and destructive actions and the legal and peaceful actions.
Brenton describes the types of repression that the prisoners that took part in this prison rebellion are subject to.
Well, there are put in isolation units for, I think, three of the men who took part in this rebellion were placed in isolation units for over a year. There have been situations where they would be at the chow hall and a cop or a prison guard would come up to their table and knock their food on the floor and accuse them of having thrown their food at another inmate or at a guard. They've had their hair pulled, they've had their religious ornaments, that the few that they've been able to hold on to, thrown in the garbage in front of their faces before being carried off to the hole. All kinds of just ugly situations like that. And it's especially severe at the Two Rivers Correctional Institute in Umatilla, Oregon. And this is one of the newer maximum security prisons in Oregon. And, of course, the Department of Corrections are really proud of it, and they say what a great, you know, new facility it is and everything. But it's completely leaves inmates completely devastated because of the lack of options they have.
The following is a description of what kind of support work is presently being done for these prisoners.
When they were placed into these isolation units following the rebellion, they were sent to other facilities following the rebellion, in part so the facility could be repaired, but also because it wasn't a good idea to have them in the hands of these people who they had just been part of a riot against. That wasn't a very logical thing to do. So they had these three men sent to other facilities and placed in isolation units. When they were released from isolation, they were sent back to the Two Rivers facility where the rebellion originally took place, which was really stupid because there are all these guards and these officials that have it out for them, that want to punish them, that want to retaliate against them for their involvement in this riot, and they didn't have the chance originally because they were sent elsewhere, because the fat cats in the Department of Corrections knew that something really severe would happen if they were kept there. So we had a postcard campaign following their release from the isolation units and they're being sent back to the Two Rivers Correctional Institute. They asked us to initiate a postcard campaign demanding that they be released from Two Rivers immediately and sent to another low-security prison, because it was clear to them that if they were sent back to Two Rivers Correctional Institute, they were going to be met with severe violence and repression from the officials of that institution. So we were able to have them successfully released from this particular institution and sent to other institutions where they have more religious rights and where the threat of violence from the authorities is far less severe. And we've also constructed a web page for them so people can follow up on their case, and that has been able to generate international support for them. The website is www.breakthechains.net. And these three inmates, they go by the name they use is the Children of the River. It's the name they have chosen for themselves, and that's what they're recognized as.
Brenton responds to a question on what kind of distinctions the organizers of the Break the Chains conference make between political prisoners and other prisoners.
Well, I think our collective, like the broader prisoner support community, we don't necessarily have a consensus on this. We don't necessarily have like a firm political line. My own position is that while I believe that most prisoners are victims of economic injustice and economic obstacles, I believe that it is best to recognize as political prisoners only those individuals who are doing time for actions that are clearly political and that are political in a coherent, clear sense. I think it's very problematic when people begin to make statements like all prisoners are political prisoners, because even while many prisoners are victims of economic injustice, there also has to be some accountability, and there has to be some recognition that some people are doing time for very awful things and very stupid things. So my own position is that the people who are political prisoners in this country are people who were involved in political organizing and political resistance on the outside prior to their imprisonment, and are people who are in fact being punished for their political organizing and their political resistance. But there are a lot of gray areas. It's not always that simple. For instance, a woman that I work with on Break the Chains is involved in supporting women who are doing time for retaliating against abusive partners. It's arguable that these individuals are political prisoners for fighting against patriarchy by holding accountable through violent means men who are abusing them. So there are all these kind of gray areas, you know, when talking about who constitutes a political prisoner.
Brenton is asked if support for political prisoners in the U.S. is more urgent at this time, or if it is an ongoing need in light of the fact that there are political prisoners who have been in the prison system for up to 30 years.
Well, I think that veteran prisoner support activists, you know, individuals from the Jericho movement, from the Anarchist Black Cross Federation, from the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee will tell you that it is a continuum and that these are issues that we're always faced with so long as we have movement people behind bars and being tortured and who are suffering behind bars because of the actions they took on the streets to further movements for social justice. So I think that veteran activists will tell you that this is a continuum, but it is better or worse in given circumstances, and I think right now it's definitely worse, and I think in the next couple of years we're going to be seeing a lot more political prisoners than we already are. We're seeing the roundup of Palestinian activists in this country and so forth. So I think that while it is a continuum, the conditions we are faced with right now in regards to political prisoners are particularly repressive and particularly difficult to deal with, and that we're going to be seeing a lot more repression, a lot more imprisonment based on people's beliefs and political actions. We have a directory of political prisoners in this country, but those are only the individuals who we are aware of and who we recognize. And I think on that list, it probably has maybe 150 individuals on that list, maybe 100. So there's quite a few political prisoners in this country who are being recognized as political prisoners. And unlike most countries, the U.S. doesn't have any real process of granting amnesty for political prisoners. Political prisoners in most countries do not serve lengthy sentences under horrible conditions like the political prisoners in the United States do.
Here, Brenton explains what anarchist prisoner aid is and how anarchists can help support prisoners.
Well, I think that anarchist prisoner aid is just that. It's anarchists providing aid to prisoners, and I think that it's a major concern for the Department of Corrections right now. The anarchist movement is a major concern for the Department of Corrections right now because the anarchists have been basically sending large amounts of anarchist propaganda into prisons and radicalizing the prisoners in facilities throughout this country. And that is a strategy that was used in the 60s and 70s where the Black Liberation and Puerto Rican Liberation and different movements would funnel massive amounts of literature into prisons so prisoners could nurture their minds and come to understand their conditions and come to understand why they are where they are and begin to figure out ways of how to combat the oppression they are facing. So I think that the anarchist movement in this country is making a priority of is trying to get radical literature into the hands of prisoners in different facilities throughout the country so that they can nurture their minds, so they can begin to understand the conditions that they are in and how to change those conditions.
We'll hear Brenton speak on censorship by the Department of Corrections, censorship of radical literature that is mailed to prisoners.
My experience is that Oregon has the worst censorship, but conditions in Oregon are much better in other respects, whereas I might not have any trouble sending a publication to a prisoner in California, but the violence and the gang warfare and so on is much worse in California than it is in Oregon. But I would say that Oregon probably has the most repressive policy when it comes to mail censorship, but there's multiple Department of Corrections throughout the country that are trying to pass rules that would prohibit anarchist literature, and I think we're going to be seeing a lot of resistance to that. There has been a lot of resistance to it in Oregon, and there's been some concessions won recently when a prisoner, a radical anarchist social prisoner by the name of Brian McCarville, was able to successfully defeat the Oregon Department of Corrections policy of refusing literature that has anarchist symbols. He was able to gain enough support to force the Department of Corrections to concede to his demands of, you know, dropping the policy of refusing literature that has anarchist symbols. But I think that other states, like Tennessee, for instance, is trying to pass a similar policy of rejecting literature on the basis that it has anarchist symbols, using the justification that anarchists are some kind of gang, similar to the Aryan Brotherhood or something, which is clearly not true. And unfortunately, in some of these other states, the prisoners don't have the kind of support that they do in Oregon and other places. But I hope that people will make a priority of trying to defeat this kind of repressive policy all around the country.
Well, thank you very much, Brenton.
Thank you.
The following is contact information for those who may be interested and able to attend the Break the Chains conference that will be taking place between August 8th and August 10th in Eugene, Oregon. You can contact them by sending an email to breakthechains02, all one word, at yahoo.com, or you can phone them at area code 541-520-5401. Also, check out their website at www.breakthechains.net. Their website has comprehensive information on the Break the Chains conference, as well as prisoner support activities throughout the U.S.